Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another edition of You're the Cure. I'm Dr. Ben Edwards with Veritas Medical, and we are bringing you an exciting show again this morning with a great guest. I'm super excited to have Sally Fallon Morrell with us today. Some of you who have been following us for a while probably know about the Weston A. Price Foundation and the Nourishing Traditions cookbook and Weston A. Price's book, Nutrition and Physical Degeneration. We've talked about that a number of times, but thought we would just go right to the source and have Sally Fallon Morrell join us today to tell us her story and give us some insights and to really help educate not only our patients but the general public into the truth about nutrition. And if I could summarize one thing about Sally, I would say she's on a mission to present the truth about nutrition. But real quick, a little intro for Sally. I was reading your bio, Sally. I didn't ask you to email me one, but I found one on the website. I didn't realize you went to Stanford, bachelor in English with honors from Stanford University, got a master's in English also with high honors from UCLA, speaks French and Spanish, and her interests include music, gardening. I know she has her own farm now, married her husband, and has, I believe, three grandchildren now. Is that right?
I'm actually up to four now.
All
four
right.
Four grandsons. Yes.
That's right. Awesome. Well, and Sally is the founder and director of the Weston A. Price Foundation and author of many different books, probably the most popular, famous one, Nourishing Traditions, the cookbook that challenges politically correct nutrition, and the Diet Dictocrats. So it's a great book. I highly recommend. So Sally, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Ben. Thank you.
I want to start with, which we do with all our guests, so that our listeners know kind of how you got to where you are now. Give as much or as little as you want to on your backstory of kind of how you got to this point of bucking the politically correct nutrition guidelines, but to share with our listeners kind of more about you from a personal standpoint.
Well, I read Dr. Price's wonderful book, Nutrition and Physical Degeneration, in the 70s when I was just starting out with my family. And it confirmed me in the way I like to cook. I had training in French cooking, so I used lots of butter and eggs and cream. We used liver, and I made chicken broth, all those great things. So I just continued cooking this way. And much later, when my children were older, I got the idea of writing a book that put Dr. Price's findings and philosophy into a more practical form, because let's face it, not many people have seen or read his book, and right. It's a little bit slow going. So, and it's interesting, I got that idea in 1990, and that was the year that the National Institutes of Health decreed that all children from the age of 2 would be put on low-fat, low-cholesterol diets, which is a genocidal diet for a growing child. And isn't it interesting that that was the very year that it came to me that I should write this book, and I actually became kind of obsessed with writing the book. It took me 9 years to completely finish it, and then in 1999, I also, along with some other great people, founded the Weston A. Price Foundation to keep the public apprised of what's going on in the science of nutrition.
Right. Well, that's awesome. So growing up in your family with your parents, the French cooking, was that part of the tradition of your family already?
It was. I was very fortunate. My mother loved to cook, and she and my dad traveled a lot, so she would bring back these great new ideas for cooking. And my father also liked to cook, and we were foodies before anyone knew what a foodie was.
Wow.
So although my I won't say that I got cod liver oil and raw milk, I did grow up with real food and plenty of butter. So we had a real food culture in our household.
Okay, so you were
and you know the guidelines, the dietary guidelines, don't want you to eat this way. They don't want you to enjoy satisfying traditional foods, because traditional foods use animal fats, and the the powers that be want you to cook with vegetable oils, which are the really profitable oils that they make out of soybeans and corn and canola and everything. And this is the great divide in philosophy. And one is basically an advertising philosophy. Animal fats are bad. Don't cook with lard. Butter will make you fat. And use our so-called healthy oils instead. And those oils are a disaster. They are a nutritional disaster. They're the main cause of cancer in this country and heart disease. And then they're the people who are going back to the way their ancestors ate. They realize their ancestors were healthy. And our ancestors did not have vegetable oils. They cooked in animal fats.
Right. Well, let's just go ahead and touch on this real quick, because I think it's really important for people to understand where a lot of these dietary guidelines from government agencies get published. What influences them? Who does that come from? You mentioned an advertising philosophy, basically. So where's the disconnect, and why are we so polar opposite?
Yes. So in 1890, that was the year of the invention of these stainless steel roller press. And this was the first time that we could get oil out of seeds, most seeds. Now, there are some seeds you can get oil out of with a stone press, such as sesame seeds and rapeseed in India. But the seeds like cottonseed, corn and soybeans, et cetera, you need that stainless steel press. So that came in 1890, and the first seeds they used it on were cotton seeds, because it was a big waste product of the cotton industry. And the cotton seed oil that comes off this roller is just absolutely filthy, smelly, gunky, brown stuff. I mean, you would never touch it. But then they figured out how to bleach it and steam clean it and so forth, and harden it to make it resemble lard. And that was Crisco. Crisco means crystallized cottonseed oil. So Crisco came out in 1913 with a huge advertising campaign, and basically they did it by demonizing their competition. Their competition was lard. So they created the impression that it's vulgar to use lard, that only poor people would use lard. But if you were an up-and-coming middle-class housewife who wanted a nice clean house and well-behaved children, you would use Crisco instead of lard. And it was extremely successful. People abandoned lard wholesale and went to Crisco, and that's really a shame, because lard is one of our best sources of vitamin D, and there's no vitamin D in Crisco. So that was the beginning. And then this industry infiltrated the organizations like the American Heart Association, the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute, and got the guys in the white coats, the doctors, to do their advertising for them and to make the claim that the animal fats were bad for their hearts and the vegetable oils were good for them.
That's some fascinating history.
I have a YouTube, which I've just allowed them to keep online. It's called The Oiling of America, which tells the story of how it was that Americans traded healthy, traditional animal fats, like, you know, butter, lard, cream, egg yolks, meat fats, for the vegetable oils, and what it did to our health.
Right. So the primary oils that Americans consume are going to be these highly processed, man-altered and influenced seed oils.
Exactly.
Basically from these commodities that are subsidized, also corn and soybean,
yeah,
and such.
Yeah, and they are, you know, people are encouraged to use these oils in cooking at home, but they're also, of course, in all processed foods, because they're very, very cheap to produce.
Right.
So you've got that happening, that wholesale change in the kind of fats that we use, and then also the huge increase in sweeteners, refined sweeteners, including the really monster of all sweeteners, high fructose corn syrup.
Right.
And you have those things together, and you've got a health crisis. There's just no way that you're going to be healthy if you are eating foods that contain all these things.
Yeah. And that's one thing we always try to stress and educate with our patients is historically, people didn't have chronic disease. People were healthy. Even Americans pre-World War II were a pretty healthy group.
Yeah.
So all this disease burden that everyone's having to suffer from, even 52% of kids I read the other day have some sort of chronic disease now. This is an absolute modern phenomenon the past 70, 80, 90 years. And this, so obviously we've got to look at what have we done different in the past 70, 80 years.
Well, you're so right. And, you know, Americans up to the Second World War were the healthiest nation on earth, the healthiest people there had ever been on earth. Because we had plenty of food, we were pasture-based, dairy and meat industries. We drank raw dairy products. We consumed, you know, all these good things. The chickens were outside. Everything was the way it was supposed to be. And with World War II, first of all, you got more and more of the industrial seed oils, but that's when you started the industrialization of agriculture and putting the animals inside and getting rid of the real farms and coming up with the industrial farms.
Industrial farms that can mass produce product at the cheapest rate possible at the expense of nutrition. Yeah. You mentioned vitamin D and lard. I read a study the other day.
Vitamin D is in dog. Yeah.
Right. Comparing the vitamin D content of from pigs inside a barn in one of these factory farms versus a free-range pig. And it was completely different. Obviously, vitamin D was in the free-range pig that was out in the pasture, out in the eating what he was meant to eat out in the sunshine. So completely different way to raise an animal.
Of course, Americans have gotten so used to buying the cheapest food possible, paying as little as possible for their food. You know, you can go into Walmart and buy eggs for 55 cents a dozen. Now, the eggs we produce, we sell for $8 a dozen, and we still don't make money on them. That's because we're not subsidized like the industrial farm is.
Right. Yeah, I tell folks all the time we've traded cost and convenience for health, and people just don't realize that. They think genetics or whatever is causing all this disease.
Or germs. They blame it on the three G's, germs, genes, and God, I say.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. You know, if milk sold today for a price that was commensurate with the increase in salaries and the increase in cost to the farmer, it would sell for $20 a gallon. That's a fair price for milk today.
Wow.
And if we paid that much for milk, we would have farmers, and they would be prosperous, and we'd have, you know, our animals outside the way they're supposed to be.
Right.
But it's very hard to get people to, you know, pay that much for food.
Right. Well, we're addicted to cheap food.
So instead, they're paying for medical care.
Right. Exactly. We're all paying super high deductibles and co-pays if you are sick and have to go to the doctor. We've shifted those dollars into the sick care industry or management of disease industry as opposed to fix it.
And we're paying for insurance, too. I mean, it's not just the copay.
Right, yeah. Can you speak to, like, specifically, I guess, the American Heart Association or any other organization? Would you say there's influence by lobbyists, by dollars in the industry, or I know science is manipulated. I mean, we've talked on our show a lot about this, about publication bias and all these different biases, and basically you can make a statistician can do anything with stats to try to state a case scientifically, quote unquote. But can you speak a little bit to that for those who are just stuck on, well, the nightly news said American Heart Association said coconut oil is bad or something like that?
Yeah, right. Yeah, the vegetable oil industry pretty much controls the boards of these nonprofits like the American Heart Association. They give them a lot of money. They pay their salaries. And they are really advertising front for the vegetable oil industry. They're really not concerned about stopping heart disease. Why would they want to stop heart disease? It's a really lucrative industry. So you have to take what they say with a big grain of salt and, you know, start reading alternative commentators. I wrote a book called Nourishing Fats where I go into this in great detail, how little evidence there really is to support the idea that you know, cholesterol in your diet or cholesterol in your blood causes heart disease. It's just, there's no evidence for that.
Right.
There's no evidence that if people have higher cholesterol than whatever number they pick, that they're more prone to heart disease.
Right.
It's just we have been so focused on cholesterol that we are ignoring all the other possible causes, one of which is vitamin K deficiency. When you're deficient in vitamin K, then you do get the buildup of plaque in the arteries. And where do we get vitamin K? We get it from poultry fats and liver and the cheese and butter and all of these good foods that they're telling us not to eat.
Right. Yep. The fat-soluble vitamins, which we can get into later, specifically A, D, and K. I know were very
yeah.
important ones that Dr. Price basically pointed out in the traditional diet.
Right. And my biggest concern is that this is being applied to growing children.
Mm-hmm.
Growing children, babies and toddlers particularly, they cannot make cholesterol. They have to get it from their diet. And this is a time when they need the most cholesterol, when their brains are growing, when their second brain, the gut, is forming. And they just need a very cholesterol-rich diet. And the doctors are telling them, no, give them like a plant-based diet. So our babies are being starved at the time when they need these foods the most. The moms need to be on a very high cholesterol diet while they're pregnant and breastfeeding. And then the first foods for babies should be egg yolk and liver, foods with the highest levels of cholesterol and the fat-soluble vitamins and everything else. Instead, what do we give our babies? We give them applesauce that comes in an aluminum foil containers or squash in a plastic container. So we are, you know, we are not. These are the critical years, you know, from birth through age 5 when everything's being formed in the body, and we're giving our growing children about the very worst diet that they could possibly get. They're getting a starvation third world diet, basically.
Yeah, I tell folks all the time, I mean, look around, just go out in public, go to any public space and look at the young kids.
Yeah.
And they're
yeah.
not lacking calories. They're most of
no.
them are a little overweight or a lot overweight, yeah. But they're lacking nutrients. And when the cell doesn't yeah. have the nutrients it needs to function, it won't function properly. I mean, it'll put other fats in the cell membrane. It'll do what it's got to
yeah.
do. But it's going to be a suboptimal functioning cell. That translates to what we call disease, but it all boils down to a cell that can't function right. It can't make energy right because the mitochondria is not fed properly,
right.
and it
exactly.
can't deal with all the free radicals because it doesn't have the ability to do that because of the lack of nutrients that run our cellular enzymes and all our cellular
yeah.
functions.
Exactly.
What it boils
exactly.
down to.
And these children look anemic. They are, you know, lethargic. Or they are uncontrollable, you know. They have a hard time connecting emotionally, hard time learning. I mean, we're just robbing our children of, you know, a happy, healthy childhood.
Yeah. Well, when
we have everything we need in this country to give them a happy, healthy childhood.
Yeah. It's really heartbreaking. And we don't have to get too much into this autism epidemic, but when I was born in the early 70s, it was, depending on what numbers you look at, 1 in 5,000 to 1 in 10,000 kids with autism are on that spectrum disorder, and now it's somewhere, depending on the numbers you look at, 1 to 36, 1 to 44,
yeah.
somewhere in there,
yeah.
But that's just the autism spectrum. If you get into ADD, ADHD, and even
yeah.
into some of these other psychoses, depression, mm-hmm. I mean, the other day for, I don't know what, if it's millennials or Gen X, but young people and young adults, their number one complaint, medical complaint, was anxiety and depression. The brain has lost its capacity to work properly and to handle stressors,
yeah.
and it's manifesting
yeah.
with all these different psychological diseases. And
absolutely, yeah.
it's
and
really
again that's you know, lack of good fats, lack of the fat-soluble vitamins. There's a fat that we get exclusively from animal fats. Excuse me, called arachidonic acid,
mm-hmm.
and we make feel-good chemicals out of arachidonic acid. And if we're not eating animal fats, we're going to be anxious and depressed.
Right. Well, I know, I believe Dr. Natasha Campbell McBride is an honorary board member or closely associated, I believe. And her book, Gut and Psychology Syndrome, lines up very much with a lot of what you're talking about.
It absolutely does, yes.
And her focus is all these psychological diagnoses and the relationship with the gut bacteria, and the lack of nourishing foods, basically.
Yeah. Well, and this, again, this is a whole other facet of this discussion about health. You know, I start with the cholesterol and the good fats, but we also need the fermented foods, the foods rich in beneficial bacteria and enzymes. We need them daily in our diet, and that, you know, populates our own gut with good bacteria. And these bacteria make feel-good chemicals.
Right, yeah. It's the serotonin, the dopamines, these neurotransmitters, 80 to 90% of them come from the gut. The gut bacteria in particular are key steps in the production process of these different chemicals. And I was just reading an article the other day on, I forget the specific species of bacteria in the gut, good bacteria, I forget the name, but the pregnant mother, the uterus of the pregnant mother at 9 months of pregnancy, the uterus sends a chemical signal to the colon, and the colon, some cells in the colon basically recruit this good bacteria out of the mother's gut, and that bacteria translocates into this cell that then migrates up to the breast and gets excreted in the breast milk, this one particular bacteria, and that bacteria later in that, if it's a girl, little baby girl born, who's breastfed and receives that good bacteria from mama, is protected from breast cancer, and that protective effect from that particular strain of bacteria from the gut lasts for four generations. It was incredible.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah,
that is amazing.
And that's just one bug, one bacteria out of the thousands and thousands and thousands that we should have in our gut and we should be passing to our babies through breastfeeding. But okay, well, we are about at a time to take a break, Sally. I really want to get into more specifics on Weston A. Price, because some people don't know him and his work and what he was all about. And so we will go that direction when we get back. So y'all stick with us. We're with Sally Fallon Morrell, and Nourishing Traditions is the cookbook that she's written. And it's more than a cookbook. It's an educational book. And the Weston A. Price Foundation, the website is westonaprice.org. You can learn all, and we'll talk more about the foundation too when we come back. So y'all stick with us. This is Dr. Ben Edwards with You're the Cure. Okay, we are back. Thanks for sticking with us. We are delighted to have Sally Fallon Morrell with us today. She's the president of Weston A. Price Foundation. WestonAPrice.org is a website. And there's a big annual conference coming up in Dallas.
That's right. Ben, you're going to be a speaker. We're so excited to have you.
Well, and I'm very appreciative of the invitation. I feel honored. One of your helpers emailed about sitting on a discussion panel on a Friday night, and she mentioned Dr. Thomas Cowan will be on the panel, Dr. Natasha McBride, and my answer was, well, I'd be honored to, but I've learned so much from those two doctors. I feel like I'm not, I'd still be learning from them, but I'm so excited to be a part of that conference. And that's November 15th through the 17th in Dallas.
Yes. Well, it's in Allen, which is north of Dallas.
Right. Well,
and it's a new hotel. We're really excited because we got a really good rate. We've streamlined the conference. We've been able to bring our reg fees down a little bit, and we do serve four wonderful Nourishing Traditions meals at the conference.
Wow, that's awesome. And I know the lineup of speakers is amazing, and it's a three-day event, and there'll be vendors, and I mean, probably 1,000 people will attend or more, I would think. It's a big event, and I would highly encourage folks to look at that. They can just go to the Weston A. Price website or Wise Traditions.
Yeah, it's wisetraditions.org or westonaprice.org.
Okay, awesome. Okay, well, Sally, let's talk about, I think a lot of the listeners may know some about Weston A. Price because I've talked about him before, but we haven't taken a super deep dive into, and for those who don't know, explain a little bit about who he was and and what he did.
Okay, so Dr. Price was a dentist, and in the 30s and 40s, he traveled all over the world studying isolated traditional people and taking photographs. And he took photographs of people with just absolutely beautiful teeth, broad, straight smiles, and no cavities. So he found 14 groups that had excellent dental health and, by inference, excellent overall health. Now, these groups all had different diets. The diet of the Eskimos was different from the diet of the South Seas, obviously. But he did find one key thing that all of these diets had in common. Excuse me, and that was nutrient density. These diets were very high in minerals, and they were particularly high in what he called the fat-soluble vitamins. So these are vitamins A, vitamin D, and what he called the X factor. We now know that's vitamin K. And where do we get these vitamins? We get them from animal fats. We get them from butter. We get them from organ meats like liver. We get them from certain seafoods like fish eggs and cod liver oil. And wherever these people were, they had these foods that provided them with the fat-soluble vitamins, A, D, and K. So we are very insistent on this. We encourage people to take cod liver oil. We encourage people to eat liver. Always use the butter, preferably grass-fed butter, so that they can get these fat-soluble vitamins. And they're like a catalyst. All the minerals in our diet go to waste unless we have the fat-soluble vitamins, because the fat-soluble vitamins are what we need to use the minerals in our diet.
Do you know what motivated Dr. Price? I mean, he's a dentist in, I think it was Cleveland, wasn't it?
He was in Cleveland. I think he wanted to answer the question, what is a healthy diet? He was very concerned about the poor health of his patients in his practice, and he really felt that people should have perfect dental health, that they shouldn't get cavities, and that they children should grow up with broad, attractive faces and straight teeth. He didn't think it was normal for a child to need braces, and he's right. It's not normal.
Right. And the time that he was... Go ahead.
And we've really found... what does prevent cavities, and it is vitamin K. Vitamin K, if you have a lot of vitamin K in your saliva, supported by vitamins A and D, you won't get cavities. You will be constantly putting calcium and phosphorus back into your teeth.
Wow, fascinating. And he happened to be living in, at the time of this kind of transition where you know, his grandparents, great-grandparents for sure, but even his parents would have been eating traditional foods. You mentioned that that stainless steel press when in the late 1800s and then the early 1900s, the Crisco coming out and the big advertising campaign to get people to switch off of lard. So a lot of these, and the farming practices too, I believe the plow came in and tilling started to become a practice in the 1920s. So he was starting to, or he was there right when all these changes were happening. He was seeing the consequences in the kids that were being born to these moms who had switched to Crisco and other and modern foods.
And using a lot of sugar and white flour. He often said, we are eating too much sugar and white flour.
Right. So he saw this here in America. He saw more cavities, poor dental formation, crooked teeth and small arches and whatnot, and wanted to just go find out what a healthy diet was. So they he traveled the world, he and his wife, correct?
That's right. And they went to, well, they started off in Switzerland. That was the first place they went. And they went to the Outer Hebrides. And then they went to Alaska. They went to the South Seas and to Africa.
And he would live with these people, correct?
Well, he certainly stayed with them. He tried to, excuse me, he tried to stay as long as he could. He always took an interpreter, and he wanted to get as much information from the people as he could. And he asked them questions. What kind of foods do you eat so that you'll have healthy babies? And almost always they told him that they had these special foods that they started to eat before conception and then during the pregnancy. And almost always one of the foods was liver. It was a type of butter from grass-fed cows in Switzerland. Fish eggs was a sacred food in many cultures. So they did have these special foods that were really high in vitamins and minerals that they ate to prepare for pregnancy and then during the pregnancy.
Wow, fascinating. And I know in his book, he talks about, like in Switzerland in particular, mm-hmm. he would observe these practices in a remote village, a more isolated village where they were still eating, living, farming, gathering food,
exactly.
preparing food
exactly.
the same way they had done for generations, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years.
Yeah.
But then he could go, you know, a few miles away or a day's trip away maybe, but same country, same genetic makeup of people.
Yes.
But maybe a village that had access to what he termed modern food. You mentioned the white flour and the sugar in particular.
Exactly.
In one generation,
the face became more narrow and they needed braces. And also childbirth became very difficult, painful, and life-threatening because the pelvic opening was not as round and not as wide. So all sorts of things changed with the change in diet. And by the way, the diet of the Swiss villagers, the isolated Swiss villagers, was raw dairy products, so raw cream, butter, milk, cheese, and then a very dense sourdough bread, rye bread. Those were the two main foods. And then when they did kill an animal, they ate the whole animal. So they ate the blood, they ate their liver, they cooked the bones, they ate the fat. That is one characteristic of all traditional cultures, is they eat the whole animal. They eat the organ meats. And the organ meats are 10 to 100 times more nutritious than the muscle meats.
Right.
So we encourage people at least, it's hard today because we just don't have this tradition. We don't even know how to get the organ meats, but at least eat liver. Try to eat liver once a week.
Right. Well, I believe I remember from Dr. Price's book, which the name of the book is Nutrition and Physical Degeneration, if someone really wants to take a deep dive into all the data, because he really documented well, lots of photographs, and it goes through every people group. But I remember reading in there a quote, I believe he said, to the effect of traditional people groups coveted the organ meats, and they would throw some of the muscle meats as scraps to the dogs. And in modern
exactly.
society, it's the exact opposite. We covet the muscle meats, the filet mignon and
yeah.
T-bone and whatever. And we throw the organ meats to the scraps to the
yeah.
dogs.
And give them to our pets, yes.
Right, exactly the opposite, which is
yeah.
very unfortunate. Another notation that Dr. Price made was that of all the people groups you mentioned, from Alaska to the South Seas, Switzerland, Africa, mm-hmm. all over the world, he didn't find one, and he didn't have any, we're all biased, I guess, but veganism and vegetarianism, it wasn't a big political or ethical or whatever bent you have. He just noted he didn't see any groups around the world that were purely vegetarian.
Or even partially vegetarian.
Yeah.
He had hoped to find a healthy group that wasn't eating animal foods, and he had to admit that they went to great risk and effort to obtain the animal foods. All of the sacred foods for having healthy babies were animal foods. Mm-hmm. So we are extremely concerned about this push to vegetarianism and veganism. It will lead to serious nutrient deficiencies, and I don't mind saying it is not a, it's not a moral diet, because it doesn't keep you healthy. The moral diet is a diet that gives you the highest degree of health, so you can do what you need to do in this life.
Right.
And you're gonna, I'm sorry, eventually, usually sooner than later, you're gonna have health problems.
Right.
From a vegan or vegetarian diet. Vegetarians have more tooth decay, they have more cancer, they have more hospital visits, and more mental illness than people who eat meat.
Right. Well, and I want to remind folks, because I don't think this is talked about enough, and maybe more so because I'm hearing this carnivore diet spoken of more and more, but animal products, organ meats are at the top of the list. But if you were to rank which foods have the most nutrients, all the nutrients that a human body needs, and we're talking vitamins, amino acids, the fats, the fat-soluble vitamins, and the water solubles, but all the nutrients a human being needs to grow and live and be healthy are found in animal products. Organ meats in particular, muscle meats are second, yeah. And then you get into the plants.
And I often say cheese, good right. aged raw cheese. If you were on a desert island and only had one food, it's a perfect complete food because it has calcium in it. And it's also a highly probiotic food.
Right.
You know, lots of good critters in there. By the way, when it comes to calcium, in traditional cultures, if they didn't have dairy products, if they didn't have milking animals, they would crush up the bones of little birds and of small mammals and add that to their food.
Wow.
So I'm very concerned. People say, well, I don't need calcium's not important. I don't need the dairy products. Well, if you want to, you know, eat bones, fine. But there really only are two sources of calcium in the human diet. One is dairy products, and one is bones.
And I don't want to come across as anti-plant. Obviously, I tell patients all the time, you want to eat lots of color. You need purples, greens, mm-hmm. yellows, oranges, all that kind of stuff. But when you want to talk about complete nutrition, it's lacking if you're only going to do plants alone.
Exactly.
Let's talk a little bit about, you mentioned it briefly, but I want to really highlight this. Because I've been doing more looking and researching into these fat-soluble vitamins, A, D, and K were the main, and there's also vitamin E, but Dr. Price focused on those three, A, D, and K. And the dental arches, the formation of not only the mouth, the jaw, and the teeth, and where the teeth are, how they're going to align, and the shape mm-hmm. of the mouth, how narrow or broad. There's research coming out about the abnormal jaw alignment and the small dental arches and how that affects the breathing, mouth breathing in particular, which affects the microbiome, both oral microbiome and the gut microbiome. And but that arch formation is dependent upon the fat-soluble vitamins. When that fetus is in the womb, those first days after conception, when the embryo is starting to form some of these key structures, it's totally affected by the vitamin A and D and K levels.
Well, the actual, it's even more interesting than that, because you start off with one cell, and it gets a signal, you're going to be teeth and bones. You're going to be teeth and spine. That cell divides once, twice, up to 30, so you get 32 cells, and then it divides one more time. 32 of those little cells, little buds, go to the jaw and form the 32 teeth, and the other 32 align themselves along the spine and form the 32 bones of the spine. And so Dr. Price found that these people who had beautiful teeth and broad faces, they had really strong backs, strong straight backs, because it's the same, these things are forming at the same time, the teeth and the back.
Right.
And you know, it's everything to do with vitamin A, vitamin D, vitamin K, and then having all the minerals at the same time.
Right. And then you talk about the pelvic girdle and the pelvic opening for childbirth.
Yes.
Nice and round and circular, and having childbirth be basically much easier versus
exactly.
a more narrow oval shaped pelvic opening for those who don't have the fat soluble vitamins.
Right. And then so they're going to have trouble having children. The pelvic opening is not the ideal shape for having a baby, and they may need intervention. They may need cesarean section. You know, I know that we overdo the cesarean section, but in most cases, the cesarean section is life-saving to these moms. So,
yeah, we talk about high C-section rates at certain hospitals around here, and just in general in America, it's approaching 50%, I believe.
It is. Worldwide,
some of that,
50%.
Right. Some of that can be out of convenience, mother and doctor, mostly doctor, I'd say. But But like you said, a lot of times it's just necessary. There's failure to progress. That baby's just not coming out. That mama's been pushing. The baby's in trouble. And because of this pelvic
you have to
opening.
do something. Yes, exactly. Right. Exactly. Well, you know, one thing we haven't touched on yet is raw milk, because that's another stand that we've taken, a campaign for real milk. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm thinking of the mom raising her children. She wants a complete food that the child will actually consume. And, you know, this is so hard for moms today to provide that complete nutrition. There's so many temptations and distractions and so forth. And this is why we're really keen on having raw milk available for growing children, raw whole milk from pastured cows.
Right. Well, let's talk a little bit about that, because people hear raw milk and they think, wait a minute, what about getting sick and all the germs, and you can't consume raw food or raw milk, and it's going to cause all kinds of food poisoning, basically.
Well, we were talking about the gut biome. First of all, raw milk is really good for the gut biome. It helps establish good bacteria in the gut and provides them with the food that they like, and so forth. But here's the thing about milk. So milk is a food designed for the growth of mammals. And it is 100% complete. It has everything that the mammal needs up to about 6 months of age. And then beyond that, it still provides a lot of things that the growing child needs. Every single vitamin and mineral in raw milk has an enzyme that ensures that it's 100% absorbed. Once you pasteurize, all those enzymes are destroyed. And so it becomes very, very difficult to absorb the nutrients in the milk. And also the proteins get warped and distorted by the pasteurization process, and that leads to all the milk allergies that we're seeing today.
Right.
Most children today get sick if they drink commercial milk.
Yeah, I tell people commercial industrialized milk that you buy on the shelf at the grocery store is a completely different product than a traditional milk that we've drank for forever and until the past 100 years, basically, that you can't even compare the two.
And as far as safety is concerned, over the past 50 years since the government has been keeping records, there has not been a single death from raw milk. There have been 50 or 60 deaths from pasteurized milk. So please don't tell me that this raw milk is dangerous. In fact, raw milk has a lot of components that protect you against pathogens, and that actually kill pathogens if they happen to get into the milk.
Can you speak to the history a little bit, like you did on the Crisco? When milk started becoming pasteurized, I would guess it's going to be somewhere around the same time when all our food became adulterated and influenced by money.
Yeah, it was the reason they wanted to pasteurize was to consolidate the dairy industry, to prevent the dairy farmer from having another way to sell his milk. He only could sell to the dairy company, and that created a monopoly. And it was really an economic move. Of course, they used the health argument, but it was really for economics that they started pasteurizing.
Right. Yeah, and I want to remind everybody, it's kind of that turn of the century and getting into the industrialized revolution, all these folks moving from rural America and moving off the farm into the big cities, and it was crowded. The cities weren't prepared from a sanitation standpoint, wastewater removal, sewage removal, fresh water, even just sunshine and fresh food. And I don't know if it's Chicago or New York, I read about these cows were basically in the city, and they were milking these cows in horrible conditions. The sanitation was awful. That led to some of the diseases.
Cities were full of horse manure.
Yeah.
You know, before the car, the cities were absolute cesspools.
Yeah.
And the very high death rate among infants, that was blamed on the milk, but it was lots of things that were causing it. And the irony is that we now have the technology, we have the testing tools, we have the refrigeration, we have everything we need to get clean raw milk to everybody in the country. Just not a problem for us anymore.
Yeah.
Instead, we're using that technology to basically smash the milk and ruin it. And we're just, it's not that we lack the technology, it's that we're using the technology in the wrong way.
Right. So we pasteurize it, which is heating it very, very hot, getting the temperature very high. So you kill all the good bugs, you kill the enzymes, it makes it hard to absorb all the good stuff. You basically deactivate.
You kill all the immune factors.
Mm-hmm. And then homogenization, you're breaking all the good fat into tiny little particles of fat that aren't as healthy and more oxidizable and just not good. This toxic soup, basically.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's exactly right. Homogenization is like a smashing. You smash the milk.
What do you say, Sally, to folks that will tell you, we're the only mammal that continues to consume milk after we're weaned off of our mother's breast?
That's not completely true, because most mammals, if you give them raw milk, will recognize this as a healthy food and consume it as long as you can get it to them. But I just don't think that's a very good argument. We do lots of things different from animals, and I don't think we should base our nutritional or dietary decisions on what animals do. Animals don't cook, you know, and so there's people who say, well, we shouldn't cook our food, and that leads into all kinds of problems for human beings. Human beings, one of the definitions of being a human being is that we cook.
Yeah.
So we do lots of things different, and the people throughout the world that had herds, that had dairy foods, like the people in the Bible where the dairy foods were highly revered and considered godlike foods, they had an advantage over the people who didn't have the dairy herds. They were taller and they were healthier. So I think that's not a very good argument to say, you know, what do animals do?
Right. Now, we can argue all day long, and I think we probably touched on enough about the difference between raw milk and conventional milk. And if you want to talk conventional, not only milk, but meat or anything conventionally grown,
it's not
beneficial for your health. So that's apples and oranges.
Well, this is what the Weston A. Price Foundation does. We have local chapters all over the country, including quite a few in Texas. We have a big chapter in Dallas. We have a big chapter in Houston. And these chapters keep a food list and tell you, you call them up and they can provide this food resource list and then you can find out where do I get good eggs? Where can I direct purchase beef? That's grass fed? Where do I get raw milk in my neighborhood? And so that's what the Weston A. Price Foundation chapter leaders do for you.
Okay. And you can become a member of that, and you've got thousands and thousands of members, and that's, I guess, what supports you. Y'all are a nonprofit, so from the standpoint of being influenced by any corporate lobby types, your funding is all from members and the conferences?
It's all from members and their donations, and our members get a really lovely journal, quarterly. The journal provides, you know, the front part of it is more scientific articles, but the back part is really practical, cooking and book reviews, and we always have an article on technology, legislative updates, and we always have an article on milk, a campaign for real milk, and updates what's going on. So it's a really great way to keep up to date with everything going on in the food world.
Awesome. Well,
so you can just go to westonaprice.org, and there'll be a button there for becoming a member. Also, just wanted to mention my blog, which is nourishingtraditions.com.
All right. Well, I encourage everybody to check those things out. And we're just about out of time, Sally, but I've got to, if you can, in a short period of time, because people ask me this all the time. And if I don't ask you, they'll get after me. Grains. I mean, keto diet and low carb diet. I mean, we implement those as tools for certain patients that are super inflamed. But grains, wheat in particular, this gluten free craze. You mentioned rye bread as a staple for the Swiss. But we've also talked about and the Bible too. I mean, the Bible, there were grains.
Wheat was the best grain in the Bible.
So talk about a little bit, the disconnect between modern grains and ancient grains and the preparation techniques of those grains.
Right. Well, the ancient grains were not manipulated genetically, and they didn't use, you know, Roundup and all these things. And in addition, the bread was a very slow-rise sourdough bread. It was like a fermentation process for the grains, and that breaks down the gluten and all the irritating components of grains, because grains are the thing in the diet that's hardest to digest. And so we need to pre-digest those grains by the proper preparation techniques.
Right.
And again, that's, we have a whole section on our website about grains. We like to say that we're the yes you can diet, not no you can't. You can't have grains, can't have this, can't have that. We like to show people how they can include everything in their diet,
right.
How they can include grains, how they can include fats, how to eat meat so that it's very digestible for you. Even how to include sweet foods, because we do have a sweet taste in our mouth, and we need to learn how to satisfy that sweet taste in a wise way, so to speak.
Right.
And again, salt. We need salt in the diet. Just have to use the right kind of unrefined salt. So we do call ourselves the Yes You Can Diet. We're not here to tell you you have to renounce good food. In fact, our diet is really delicious. It's easy to stay on.
Right. Well, what I love is it's going back to the wise traditions. These traditions,
yes,
ancestrally, people just knew. It was passed down generation to generation to generation, and they just had this innate knowledge and wisdom about, like, organ meats for pregnant women or conception,
right,
age women, and you need to just consume different things that they just knew. It was just almost a common sense,
and
we've lost
by
it.
The way, and for the nursing woman, most cultures recommended a porridge, a grain porridge that had been soaked for a long time. So it was a sour grain porridge as a very important food for nursing women.
Right.
So, yeah, we're not an organization that's saying you can't have grains or you can't have carbs. We warn you about refined grains, refined carbs, but we're always saying, here's how.
Right.
Here's how to include these things.
Right. And these 14 different people groups, they were all eating different things. There were some common threads amongst them, but they were all eating different things. So it's going to vary from person to person and where you live and what,
yes,
you have access to and
yes,
what makes you feel good. But it's all going to have the same common theme of it's going to be ancestral and traditional.
Yes.
And the ratios might vary a little bit. And even seasonally, it might vary. Maybe it is more of a keto, very low carb in certain seasons of the year or of your life. And other times, it's,
right,
going to be a little,
right,
higher carb.
Right, right. But we find that people are actually going too low in the carbs, and then that will affect thyroid function. So, again, the good news is that the ideal diet is not an extreme diet. It includes everything.
Right.
Meat, fats, carbs, soups, everything.
Right. It's all about the sourcing. It's all about the quality and the preparation,
yes,
of,
yes,
these foods. And I can't go without saying it also boils down to your lifestyle. I mean, this stress,
yes,
modern stress and go, 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 and on these gadgets all the time. And we don't,
yes,
just sit down at a table with our family, turn everything
and
else off,
meal,
and have a meal,
yeah,
and get back to how we used to live also, not just,
yeah,
how we used to,
yeah,
eat. Plus, get,
yeah,
in the garden.
I say that
garden
a lot. You know, one thing I really stress, if you want to get healthy, you need to eat 3 meals a day or 2 meals a day, but not between meals, no snacking between meals. And you sit down and really enjoy your meal when,
yep,
you're eating.
Yeah.
So.
The snacking, the stress of modern life is very damaging.
Yeah.
I'm in a complete,
yeah,
agreement.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, WestonAPrice.org, and then your blog and Facebook, Sally?
It's NourishingTraditions.com.
Okay. Well, I encourage everybody to go to those places and go to them regularly and get educated and continue to get
support. And become members if,
yeah,
you want to support our work. Yes.
Become members, and because this is all about supporting each other. We talk about supporting local farmers. We've got raw milk,
yeah,
dairies here in Lubbock area. We need to help each other and support each other so we can, for the sake of the future generations, our kids and grandkids and great-grandkids, there's got to,
yeah,
be a tradition that's passed on of health. So thank you, Sally, for being the leader that you are in this movement and for all your hard work and all that you do. It's great.
And we'll see you soon. We'll see you in Texas.
Yep, we'll be in Dallas, November 15th through 17th. I encourage everybody, yeah, to consider going to that conference. So this is Ben Edwards. I'm sorry, we're running out of time. But Ben Edwards with,
okay,
You're the Cure, and Sally Fallon Morrell with the Weston A. Price and Nourishing Traditions. So thank you again, Sally. We'll have to have you back someday.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay.